Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 25 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, in the flesh, once again, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And yes, Arco, we know we're late. You should get used to that by now. We're pretty much late all the time. And this time, in fact, we weren't as late, were we, Jared?
I mean, we're practically early in LA.
Yeah. We're definitely early because it's just 9 minutes since the scheduled time. And hello to you, Arco, Sharitan KD, Aditya, Mani Ja, and Vignesh Ram. Varun is there as well. Thank you all for joining. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today on Overthrows, and we'll kick this off with the England versus West Indies test match at Lord's. I was there, Jared.
Yeah, I can take this one off. tell me when you're done. What did you learn?
What did I learn? Well, apart from the cricket stuff, I also learned that Lord's is super cool. The lunch is amazing. I loved how everything was super smooth.
Lunch is amazing. It's okay.
I love the beef on day two. It was some of the best beef I've ever had. But overall, it was a great experience. And I think someone from our Patreon also, or not Patreon, yeah, Discord Patreon sub, also asked me to describe some of that experience. Well, I mean, I almost wanted to cry, right? You dream of going to Lord's and sharing, you know, workspace with some of the best. Day one was quite a challenge because I was fanboying. Seeing all of these greats around me, Lara, Sangha, Athas and Nasser, I kind of know already, but there were so many other people like Cook was there, Brody was there, Stephen Finn, if you will, Harmy, all of these people you've looked at and watched on the screen your entire life. And then you're like, act like a professional, Behram. This is not the place to fanboy. But
so some of the English journalists who were all completely jaded were saying, oh, Behram was so excitable all the way through. But I do think there is a difference as well for people like you and I who come to this late in our life.
Hmm.
So if you're like 18 and you study journalism and then at 22, 23, you start to go into these sorts of places, especially if you're from England, you kind of like, that's where you're expecting to go. That's what you're expecting to do. Whereas you come at it very similar to me from this random thing. And we suddenly end up in Lords and everything. Hmm. It is a very different environment to be in. And we are much more like fans in that element. Than some of those jaded journalists that I'm talking about. No names, Tim Wigmore.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I do think it is slightly different from that point of view. But you did fanboy.
Yeah, absolutely I did. And I met Sangha and I told him that I'm trying not to fanboy, but XYZ. And I mean...
It's always a good way to start with I'm not going to fanboy while I'm fanboy.
But it was a great experience. And I mean, everything that I wanted out of it, I feel like I got out of it. And the test match wasn't as great, wasn't as compelling. England pretty much won it one-sided by an innings and 114 runs.
I think we've covered the test match.
Yeah. But we're going to do a footmarks on Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Just a bit on him, though, over here. Obviously, his final test match went out with a bang. Chugged a pint of Guinness in 4 seconds. Lots of free marketing for Guinness.
I was thinking that too, actually.
In this particular test match. But yeah, 40,037 deliveries. 704 wickets in this test match. He took 4, 1 in the first innings, 3 in the second. Some of those second innings wickets were, you know, just as good as we remember him. It was peak Jimmy.
I'll take your word. I had completely zoned out by second innings.
He could have had another wicket, but he dropped a dolly. But
the caught and bowled.
Yeah. Ultimately, 704 wickets in 188 test matches. And then he also remained not out. Right, 0 of 0. He's got 114 not outs.
No
right?
extra reverse sweeps.
No, unfortunately, no reverse sweeps. And Jamie Smith is to blame for that, right? He kind of threw it away, which is why Jimmy never got to bat. But a fantastic career. And just the fact that, you know, he's gone on for 21 years in Test cricket. I mean, Chris Wokes was supposed to be the heir to Jimmy's throne, and he looked more washed than Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, that it's so funny. I remember when Graham Onions was the guy he would take over from Jimmy, and I can't even remember the last time we even mentioned Graham. So, yeah, I mean, that's why it is ridiculous. It was a terrible test. West Indies can't bat. I thought that if they had bowled first, they would have at least put some pressure on England. Yeah. And to be honest, I thought they bowled okay when they first bowled. They just didn't get the breakthroughs. And because of that, England eventually got away from them. And that was the end of the game. So it was a real shame from that point of view. But it was a horrible game of cricket. And I was glad I missed it. And I was glad that you went.
I got super sick by day three when Jared saw me when I came back from them. The game, he was like, you look like a dead man or something along the lines.
I mean, I'm sure I said it much harsher than that.
Yeah, and then I popped like these ibuprofens and then finally I was able to make Jared's furniture for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened.
He was so sick. He was so sick that I made him make my furniture.
But those were some fantastic meds though. Anyway, Jimmy remained not out and will remain not out in our hearts forever. We'll come back to him in the footmarks episode. I don't want to waste too much breath on him. Let's come to Gus Atkinson. First ever innings, bowling innings in an English shirt in Test cricket. Gets 7 for 45. Next dig gets 5 for 61. His figures of 12 for 106 are the fourth best ever figures in the history of Test match cricket on debut. What do you have to say about that 12 for?
I didn't think he bowled very well. I mean, he was fine. Don't get me wrong. I don't want this to be like, you know, I don't think we get aggregated from the site, although maybe occasionally we do on the podcast. Don't want to be like, Jared Kimber says Gus Atkinson is shit. I think he's a good bowler and I think we'll continue to see him be a good bowler. I did not see someone who deserved to take 12 wickets in a test match. A lot of his early wickets came from nothing balls, you know, dirty dragons. Was it Kirk? What's his name? Getting a
McKenzie.
I don't need to remember that name. Getting a half volley and getting an edge behind. There was a lot of just junk deliveries that got him wickets, you know, shot being smashed to point and being caught. Look, he bowled fast.
Yeah.
I thought he used the slope well.
The scrambled seam delivery was a good one.
I mean, I kind of expected that coming in. But yeah, there was no point in me where I went, wow, this is the great bowler. But I almost think this puts too much pressure on him. Whereas that, in fact, if you ask me, he didn't even have the best debut of an England player in this test.
He had never taken a 10-for, I believe, in first-class cricket.
He's never bowled to the West Indies.
Yeah. And I mean, sure, the scramble seam delivery that got rid of Joshua De Silva, I like that one. I like the fact that he could be a middle-overs enforcer in the sense that a short delivery is good, right? He could be used to bounce opposition batters out. But I don't see him taking the new ball, right?
No, he's a first-change bowler.
People kept saying that this was a changing of guard and Jimmy passing on the baton. I mean, he's not a Jimmy replacement. That's not true. And I'm not crapping on his 12-for entirely. I think there were a few wickets over there. There were a few wickets over there that were really, really top drawer. But I just feel like we'll need to see more of him. And it can only be downhill from 12 wickets in your first game.
Yeah, I just hope that they don't put too much pressure on him. Because I don't... There's no way you can go back through that game and be like, the balls he bowled deserve to take 12 wickets, right? That doesn't mean that there's another day he's not going to bowl great and take two wickets and everyone's going to say, oh, Gus Atkinson is now a bust. So we have to be realistic with these things. I think he's a fine bowler. I think he's a good first-change bowler into the future. I think those bowlers are very hard to find. I just think the 12 wickets are completely flat as the way that I saw him bowl in this.
I mean, if he's bowling scramble seam, you're not going to give him the new ball for sure, right? That does not sound like
idea. Everyone bowls scramble seam with the new ball.
Right? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I would have thought that would have ruined the ball.
No, not at all.
Okay. But well, there was this moment in the game.
I did get really nerdy.
Yeah.
You had a ball in your hand.
I did.
You put it down somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the reasons that scramble seam works more than the normal seam is because when you're bowling normal seam, you keep hitting the seam over and over again, which means it flattens out very quickly. When you're bowling scrambled seam, you sometimes hit here, you sometimes hit here, and the actual seam doesn't flatten out as much, which means the ball actually stays in better shape than it would normally.
Well, you learn new stuff every day.
That's not going to be very good for the audio podcast.
There was a moment in the game, though, where he took, three wickets and four deliveries in the over. So that was special. I won't say
he's quick. Yeah. He's naturally quick. I think his first ball was about 89 miles an hour. I like that.
I called him an express pacer on Twitter and people were like, he's not express. I'm like, from where I'm looking at it in the press box, he looks pretty quick to me.
I think if you bowl your first ball in a test match at 89, that means you are naturally quick. What it means is that you're not straining to bowl a very fast ball.
Yeah.
You have natural pace. He's not Mark Wood, is he?
Of course. He's not Mark Wood. He's not Nokia.
Yeah. So he's not on that level of pace. But if I think now we are so used to so many bowlers bowling over 90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
but we forget that a lot of those guys who bowl over 90 miles an hour actually usually bowl around 85 to 87, whereas he's someone who can consistently bowl at 90 miles an hour, and that is a very different when you talked about it.
Yeah, and he looked like a proper workhorse as well. I feel like, you know, he is definitely one for the long run, considering he's just 26 years of age. But coming to England's fielding, forget the Jimmy drop, right? That was something that he should have never, I don't know why he didn't put two hands at it, right? But apart from that, their fielding was spotless. Some of the English fielders, they hung on to some absolute screamers. Harry Brooks catch, Ollie Pope's catch at point, right? I mean, after a long period where we were seeing tons of drop catches. Mm. This was new. This was refreshing. Why are there no catches? How are they holding on to everything? And it was one of the reasons why they were as commanding as they were.
Look, I just think that it's one of those things with catches. I think if you look at it over a period of 2 years or something, you get an idea of who are the better fielding teams and who are the worst fielding teams. Mm. But in any game, you have a chance of not dropping any catches or dropping seven catches.
Mm.
And that's probably what we saw here. But there were some fine catches. But I don't suddenly have England as an elite fielding team again on the back of that. But, you know, they're maybe a slightly younger team. Quite often younger teams are slightly better in the field. Although not always with catching. Usually with running around and chasing things. But, yeah, I thought they fielded brilliantly in this game.
Yeah, even the West Indies got that run out where they all ran towards the boundary rope to do a celebration. Mikael Louis and his brother.
He was very happy with that. It is Louis and not Louis.
Yeah, it is Louis. You're talking about Louis Kimber and Louis Kimber. Yes. We're still unsure about. This guy is Mikael Louis.
No, only because on commentary, they were calling him Louis.
Oh, they were? Because I checked with Bish.
Yeah. Bish is one man.
Bish would know, right?
Well, have you heard the story about Bish and Alec?
Yes, I do. I do know that story.
He got it right, and everyone told him he was wrong. Yes. And he changed it, and then it turned out he was right the first time.
Yeah, Alec Athanase told him that, Mr. Bishop, you had it right the first time.
I don't know why Crick Info didn't do this, by the way, but if you go to Basketball Reference, it has the pronunciation of every player's name. And it shits me to tears in a sport where there's so much confusion over pronunciation. We still don't have that.
Yeah. But anyway, he dropped a catch earlier, but then redeemed himself with that run out. And he was looking like one of those players who could have a decent career for the West Indies. But you found a chink in his armor, particularly in the way he was lining up for a ball.
Yeah, look, I think he plays under his eyes, which I really like in Test cricket. But he does have a kind of an automatic front step.
Mm.
And I think that's a very normal thing for first-class cricketers and club cricketers to have. Because you don't get as many LBWs in Test cricket because of DRS, you get pinged a lot more.
Yeah.
And I could see the way that Wokes was bowling to him specifically, and then Anderson later on, that they were just like, well, great, we can nick him off because you can nick off any player, but we've got this secondary thing of we move him across the crease and we can ping him on his front pad a little bit. I don't think he went out in this particular test.
Yeah.
But it's something to look at. Look, he's of you know what was that his seventh or eighth game?
I think it was his eighth game.
Yeah. I thought he looked great for a player who only played a first class game.
He hit that six, the David Gower-esque six.
I mean, the six I don't give a shit about. but I like the way he lined up. Mm. I like the way he waited for the ball to be under his eyes, a few things. He looks a lot better than their number three, whose name I'm still going to ignore.
Kirk McKenzie.
Okay. I think there's a lot there to work with him, but there is an element of, and we saw that with Cam Green. We see a lot of players when they go from first class cricket to test cricket, the LBW law changes, essentially. And you get a lot more LBs against you at that level for that particular movement. Mm. And teams are very quick to work it out. And it took England about half an hour to work it out.
Yeah, I remember I was watching on day one and we were talking in our group. And I was like, if only they can get 250 over here. And literally that point onwards, they lost like all their wickets.
I don't know. I almost fired you when you said that. I was like, 250? What are you watching?
Yeah. There was a bit of a partnership at that point. But anyway, coming to England's batting, right? Five Englishmen scored half centuries. Zach Crawley, 76, who really hasn't looked back in quite a long time now. He's been one of their best batters. Ollie Pope got 57. Harry Brook got 50. Joe Root, 68. And Jamie Smith, on Test match debut, scored a very attractive 70. And there are a few things that I liked about that innings, Jared. A, his footwork. Loved it. And B, I liked that he had these multiple gears to his game. Initially, he was just consolidating.
Boring is what you
like. I suppose so. I mean, he's a 23-year-old as well. He's going to develop further. But then later on, when England lost wickets and it was just like him batting with the tail, he showed just how explosive he can be. He literally hit one ball outside of Lord's. And this tells you that here is a batter who could be England's long-term, you know, test number six. But then again, sure, he had a great wicket-keeping game. No mistakes, some great takes down leg side. He's not primarily a wicketkeeper.
He's not a wicketkeeper, is he? In first class level, anyway. Look, I was interested in how slow he batted. It was a tricky wicket, but they were ahead of the game, and I kind of thought you'd see a young player come out and try and put his stamp on things, and he didn't. Be interesting to see how England see that, what they want from him. But as you said, once he got in and he whacked some later on, it was absolutely fine. I was really impressed with the way he batted. You know, of the three debut players in this game. I thought he was the best, even if he didn't have the best figures. And I really like the way he went about his batting. Wicket keeping is still it's way away from making any rash judgments on it. It looked okay.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see when he keeps wicket in Asia, right? On how good he really is. And we know for a fact that he is primarily a batter, which is what Baz and Stokes kind of want from him as well. Interesting how they went at close to 4 and over in this test, which is about a run less than what they were going at in the 2 years prior. I asked Stokes, see this, sidestepped the question entirely.
Okay. I mean, it was a tougher wicket. I would be surprised if you could score at 5 runs a wicket there. Although once they got on top, they could have put more pressure back on and they didn't. But maybe that was partly having a debutant out in the middle.
Yeah, perhaps that was the case. Coming to Ben Stokes. So he actually set a record this test match. He is now the third player in the history of test cricket after Sobers and Callis to do the double of 6,000 plus test runs and 200 plus test wickets. He did get out once again for a single digit score now, and that's 5 consecutive single digit scores now for Ben Stokes in test cricket. And with the ball, he was good. But Jared, he was bowling, what, 8 to 9 over spells? And I get that he's pain-free now, but that does seem a bit stupid to me as well, especially when you've got Shoaib Bashir, who did not bowl this entire test.
I just thought it was madness. I really, when he bowled that long spell, I was like, you don't deserve nice things. because you're watching it and you're thinking to yourself, okay, he's trying to prove he's fit, fine. We can all understand that. He's been bowling a lot more recently, but it's like, you've already won this game. You don't need to bowl this. And if he does hurt himself or injure himself, all this sort of stuff, how does that help him? I just don't see the point of that. This is the thing. Someone put a comment up. It might have been Jessica, actually, on one of the things where, you know, we were talking about on TalkSport the difference between Bazball the theory, right, and Bazball the cult.
Yeah.
Right? Most of us think Bazball the cult's stupid as shit.
Uh-huh.
Bazball the theory, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but a lot of us understand it.
Yeah, and I like it.
Yeah. That was when the cult takes over. Whereas actually, it's just like, you don't, mate, you bowl 5, 6 overs. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling good. No one cares if you're feeling good. We don't need you to bowl a 9-over spell in a game we've already won.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. And if he did it in the second or third game of the series, right, when he, you know, had played a little bit more, I'd be like, that's fine. He's bowled a little bit in first-class cricket. But save it for when you need it.
Yeah, and plus you've got Shoaib Bashir. Everyone's talking about him and of how you picked him ahead of Jack Leach. At least try him out, right? Yeah. I know the surface is suitable for seamers, but look at how well good the Kish Modi bowled.
Yeah, spin bowling was fine on that wicket.
You know, like, those were two of the best deliveries in the game. The one that got rid of Stokes that came in, and the arm ball that got rid of Root.
Also, if Bashir's going to play, he's going to have to bowl on wickets that don't help him.
Exactly.
Otherwise, he shouldn't be playing.
Yeah. Coming to West Indies bowling, right? We talked about how good Guthakesh Mothi was. I think he was the best West Indian bowler in that innings. And the, you know, pick of the bowlers was Jaden Seals, 4 for 77. He's been playing a lot of county cricket. So that's good stuff for them. Seals getting a 4 for and Mothi, you know, basically validating his spot in the team. Because a lot of people were like, should Kevin Sinclair have played to kind of give the West Indies more batting depth? If you think about it, Mothi looked pretty good with the bat as well. Probably their best batter and best bowler, if you think about it holistically. Shamar Joseph, though, was cramping. I'm not sure what his fitness is like. He had bowled 14 overs between the test match at the Gabba and this test match at Lords, which is not a lot of deliveries.
I had a friend message me saying we might have already seen Shamar Joseph's best game. And I think that's probably rushing to judgment way too fast.
Yeah.
But I do understand the general point of, I think he's got a lot of talent and he does a lot of things, but I'm not sure his body is ready to bowl at this pace consistently. And I think there are some other issues with him as a cricketer at the moment where he needs to get better. I think the big issue was that they decided that they wanted the extra bowler.
Yeah.
And actually, Holder batting at 7 and De Silva batting at 8 would have been a better option for them because they need extra batting.
Absolutely.
Not extra bowler. Yeah. The whole Sinclair thing, I don't care about Sinclair's bowling or whatever. But that actually just gives them extra batting with it when you can have another specialist batter in the side then. And Holder at his peak could pinch hit as a number 6.
He's
probably a number 7 anyway.
Yeah.
And then that moves De Silva down further. And by the time De Silva comes in, you know, he can cause all sorts of problems just because the ball might be old. I just think that's a much better option for them. But they went with the extra bowler. And it could just be that they knew that Shamar Joseph couldn't get through his spell.
Perhaps.
If that's the case, they were right.
But then for the next test match, would you drop... I don't think Shamar Joseph would be fit enough to play based on what we saw. But then would you bring in that extra batter? Because that leaves the West Indies with three seamers, right? That could be an issue.
I don't have any problems with three seamers. Three seamers is a normal amount of seamers. Some people get to England and they lose their mind. It's like, how are we going to play with three seamers? What do you think cricket has been doing for the last 150 years? Like, if you're lucky enough to have an all-rounder who's a poor seamer, you might do it. Or if you don't have a good spinner and you've got a really green... The wickets in England aren't like bright green or anything. You know, that was a good wicket, but Moti bowled really well on it, right?
Yeah.
Moti bowling from one end and bowling 25 to 30 overs a day and you rotating your three seamers is absolutely fine. They're not a good side.
Hmm.
And they're specifically not good at batting.
Yeah.
So why come in with one batter short would be my question.
No, I think that's absolutely sound analysis. And I would hope that they shore up those batting resources because the batting was abysmal, right? That's what lost them this test match. They were not looking competitive at all based on them not even managing what? England's lead was more than their aggregate score?
Was it that much? Yeah.
I can't even remember, honestly. Maybe it wasn't that much. Maybe I've kind of exaggerated a bit over here. But hopefully they can bat a bit better and give us somewhat of a competitive series moving forward. And that pretty much wraps up everything on the Lord's Test. We'll be taking a short break. You're watching Overthrows with Jared and Behram. Stay tuned. After this short break, we'll be back.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Jared and Behram and we've spoken about the Lord's Test between England and the West Indies at length. Now we're going to shift our focus to the T20I series between India and Zimbabwe, which was being played in Zimbabwe. The last time we spoke about the series, Jared, it was tied at 1-1. Zimbabwe had won the first T20I and then India completely, you know, butchered them in the second game. Well, that has kind of continued. India have won the remaining three fixtures as well to take the series 4-1. And Washington Sundar, who had done really well in the first two games, took 3 for 15 in the third, ended up with 8 wickets in this series and was awarded the Player of the Series award, which must make you really, really happy.
Any Washington Sundar news is good news is always greatly received by me. I'm hoping one day he plays for the Washington Freedom. Look, he's a very talented player who, like a lot of young all-rounders, is taking slightly longer to develop. And because of that, people will say for years, oh, he's a bust, he's no good, he's, you know, rubbish. It's like, you don't get many players with his kind of two skills. But he's taking a while to perfect them. Everything I've just said is I can't think of a better place for Washington Sundar to bowl than Zimbabwe. I think it specifically helps taller finger spinners.
Yeah.
And so it's a very good environment for him to bowl to, and he wasn't bowling against very good batters, but good for him. They went in with a bit of a training side or a B/C side to see some things. Mm. And that's what they wanted. One of the things they wanted was Washington Sundar to play like that. He's not a regular in the IPL, right? They're giving him this time partly because he hasn't developed as quickly because he hasn't played as much in the IPL.
He's definitely, I would think that he has cemented his place at least for the short term in India's first team as well because Ravi Jadeja has retired, right? And I mean, he's been knocking on the door for quite a while. And you said that he hasn't quite developed at that level, but this series would be a big confidence boost and it would give them more options going forward.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is I think his bowling is, even though he hasn't actually bowled all that well in the IPL, I'd actually say his bowling is the thing that's held up a little bit more.
Mm.
And he has a role in bowling, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he does have a role in batting at the moment. So you have got one of those problems where you've got an all-rounder. It's a bit like Sam Curran, right? It's like, oh, Sam Curran, it's great. It's like, where's the best place to use Sam Curran as a batter? Mm. It's probably batting at number 4. And it's like, well, he's not a very good anchor.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a bit the same with Washington where he's like, well, the best place to bat him is probably opening. But when he has opened, he hasn't made any runs. So he just has to find a role where he can bat. And that's the next part of it. You know, that whether they play main side or whatever, they need to find a spot that he works and a specific area that he can work in. Maybe he plays as the biggest problem he might have is I still think his best role is probably the Akshar role, which is batting number 7 and number 8, but coming up to whack the spinners occasionally. And, of course, with Akshar there, you're going to use Akshar. So, yeah, I think it's I think it's an issue from that point of view. But it's great that he's finding form. I still think by the time he's 27, 28, he's going to be a fantastic cricketer.
Yeah, I mean,
I've invested in him as a very long stock.
Yeah, it's hoping, fingers crossed. Some of the more, you know, I don't want to call them senior, but more sought after players in that Indian side also did really well. We spoke about Abhishek Sharma last week, how he scored a ton in 46 deliveries. But then something interesting happened. India moved him to first drop. So he didn't get the power play in a game or two. And don't get me wrong, Shubman Gill was the top scorer in this series, right? 170 runs. And this week he scored, what, 58 unbeaten, 66 and what, 12 or something. And Yashasvi Jaiswal, we all know how good he is.
Yep.
In the fourth game, I believe he scored an unbeaten 93 or 53. Amazing. But if you've got Abhishek Sharma and you, you know, wish to play him, why would you not give him the power play?
Look, this depends. I saw some of this online a little bit. And my first thought was, what is the point of this series? Have they found out something more about Abhishek Sharma at the moment? Are they trying to work out if Abhishek Sharma can bat first drop? Look, if you're asking me, Gill makes a lot more sense at first drop than Abhishek Sharma does,
yeah.
Right? But maybe they know that Gill can bat first drop. Can Abhishek bat at first drop? Can he bat at second drop? Is there a flexibility in his batting? And that's a really important thing for India to find out. Did he make any runs at first drop?
He didn't.
Okay, he should go back to open. But if you don't do in this series, like, it was incredible to me watching Indian fans lose their minds over this. And it's like, what do you think is happening here? Because it doesn't matter. And the more you can learn about Abhishek Sharma, even if you only learn he can only open, right? That's fine. Now you've learned that. That's the thing. These series, that's why they matter. Right? Because you have the ability to do that sort of thing against a team like Zimbabwe, which you can't do against the better side. Or it would be, you know, you might lose games against better sides. I've got no issue with them doing that because I'm pretty sure Shubman Gill could bat first drop. And I didn't know if Abhishek Sharma could bat first drop. And, you know, signs point to no.
Yeah. Shubman Gill's captaincy was praised a lot in this series as well. You think they're probably looking at him and investing in him as some long-term leadership option?
Again, I think when you're putting together a series like this, and who knows who's in charge of Indian cricket and who's making decisions.
Right? Yeah.
But if it's me, I'm thinking to myself, okay, it doesn't matter to me if he's ever going to be a future captain. Right. But if he is, now he's captain.
Yeah.
But what he has, he's understood what captaincy is. We're making him think about things that aren't quite himself. We're making him think about what it's like to lead the Indian team. You put him in a situation, Shubman Gill, where it's like, okay, so you've captained a little bit here, you've captained a little bit there. Now you understand captaining a lot better, but he'll also think about cricket a lot better. The thing about captaincy is it's absolutely great, you know, as a role, right? But Jimmy Anderson thinks like a captain and Jimmy Anderson doesn't captain, right? And if you can get a player who is your second best player, your third best player, your fourth best player, who maybe never wants to be a captain, but tactically is really good or is really good around the dressing room. And because they've done a little bit of captaincy, they understand it. That's all for the better. So I don't think it matters whether he's a long-term prospect or not. I think they just keep trying out a bunch of players till they work out who their next captain is. Obviously, Hardik will do probably the T20 side. But in other formats, you know, Gill is a future player.
Pont is an option.
Yeah, Pont is an option. Shreyas Iyer is an option.
Yeah.
So they've got multiple options available to them. But it doesn't matter if they rotate it through a few different people. People are thinking about cricket still like it's the 90s.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the 90s. This is a development squad. Right?
It is.
You go, okay, we have the opportunity to give someone captaincy. Who is going to benefit the most for Indian cricket? Right? Okay, Shubman Gill. He might be the vice captain in the test team in 2 years' time. Right? Yeah. He might be the captain of the test team in a couple of years. Let's give it to him. Right? And it might be, we never want to give him limited overs captaincy for this reason, this reason, this reason. Doesn't matter. They've built up a little bit more leadership for him. That's the important thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of Indian fans did not appreciate the fact that they played, what, 4 to 5 openers in one of those games.
Yeah, that was...
That's the one that really bothered them. And I understand that.
Yeah, but that gets back to what I was saying before, which is, are they trying to work out if those openers can play other roles for them?
Yeah.
Right? And if they are, that's why Matthew Wade helped Australia win a World Cup against, Pakistan, batting down the order, and he never batted down the order. But Australia had tested him enough to be like, do you know what? We think in a pinch he can bat at number 6 or number 7. And then they got to a World Cup semi-final and he won them the game.
Yeah, scoop right. Shaheen for what, 3 sixes in a row?
And the thing about the opening batters, and this is really, really important, is that the most talented players usually end up opening in T20 cricket, especially in franchise level, because you're paying money and you want them to face as many balls as possible. But if the five most batters in your country, if five best batters in your country are openers, you as a team have to decide how to make that fit.
Yeah.
Right. Now, sometimes it's a mistake to pick four or five, but it's not always. In this case, obviously, it doesn't sound ideal. But again, they're playing Zimbabwe. They beat them 4-1 in the series. You know, they lost a game. That's fine.
Yeah. The only reservation that I had was when I saw Abhishek Sharma come in the seventh over. I was like, no.
It's weird.
Yeah. And then someone said that you were wrong. He made 25 of 20 in the last game. And I was thinking, did you watch the IPL at all? Like, I mean, he doesn't have to prove his power play credentials. But anyway, I agree with you. It is a development squad, right? And they did treat the series in that manner as well. There were a few other performers for India in the last game. Sanju Samson, who didn't get a game in the T20 World Cup, he scored a 50. Shivam Dubey put in an all-round performance, quick fire 26, and then two wickets with the ball. So they've got some all-round options.
The last time he ever bowled.
Yeah, pretty much. And then also Mukesh Sharma, is it? No, Mukesh Kumar. I always mix up my Kumars and Sharmas. Mukesh Kumar took 4 for 22. So lots of fringe players coming up to the fore and performing. Overall, you'd have to say it was a successful series for India. You can't obsess over the one loss. There were a lot of things learned.
No, this is another thing, just to go back. Mm. We're still thinking about cricket like it's the 90s, as I said before. And it's like, oh, and, you know, they lost. It doesn't matter. If they lost 5-0 here and they worked out potentially who their next captain was, they worked out that Abhishek Sharma could or couldn't bat down the order. If they worked out who their fourth best seamer was, that's all that matters, right? The fact that they won, then that's better.
Hmm. One thing that I would have done had I been in the Indian management for the series was I would have given Harshit Rana a go, just one game, just to see what he's like, right? Because he had a really good IPL season for the Kolkata Knight Riders, won the IPL as well. So I think that's one thing that they missed out on. But coming to Zimbabwe, of course, we've talked a lot about India. Last time we spoke about them, we mentioned how, you know, it was the old horses who were getting in the performances still and you didn't see a lot of young blood. Well, this week, there was a young 22-year-old batter called Dion Myers.
I thought you were going to say the guy playing in county cricket who made a big score in the blast.
No, not him. But Dion Myers, at 22 years of age, scored an unbeaten 65 of 49. It came in a lost cause, but at least we've seen someone step up.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't care what the age of the batters are. If they can find people that can actually hold it back. Because, I mean, we just spent a lot of time talking about the West Indies. If you think the West Indies can't bat, you need to watch some Zimbabwe cricket. Their batting has been dreadful for such a long time. So any batting talent that they can find where someone who can make a good score against a good team, I think they would take that. So the fact that it's a younger player, all the better.
Well, let's see if some more youngsters can come through. I think it was Brian Bennett or something along those lines who also did well a while back. And this kid, Dion Myers, he's come through age group cricket, under 13s, under 19s. I haven't watched a lot of him, but I really want Zimbabwean cricket to be better. And for that, they'll need to figure out how to bat, right?
It's an underrated part of cricket, but I think more teams should work out how to bat.
Yes. Anyway, let's come to some women's cricket stuff. And India's women and South Africa's women were playing a T20I series. Last we spoke on the show, and South Africa were actually leading 1-0 with one of the games washed out. Well, India bowled South Africa out for 84 in the final T20I, and they won the game by 10 wickets. Smriti Mandhana scored an unbeaten 54, and in this entire series, all formats, right, ODIs, tests, and T20Is, she batted in 6 innings. Jared, she scored 592 runs. You heard that correctly.
Yeah, that's handy. She should continue to do that. No, look, she's a fantastic player. World Cup coming around the corner. It'd be really interesting to see. I know you've already said Australia cannot win that World Cup, if I remember correctly. So, you know, England and India almost look like the two teams that are, well, certainly the two teams most likely to beat Australia, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And they're both lining up pretty well at the moment.
Yeah, and in this game, Pooja Vastrakar took, 4 for 13? And Radha Yadav, who's been in terrific form, took 3 for 6. So those are two really important players for that T20 World Cup who came good.
No, definitely. I mean, I'm really fascinated with this World Cup. I wonder if it's the first World Cup we've had since Australia took over where we had three legitimate teams who can win it. And I don't mean three teams who might play good at certain times. I mean, literally, like a bit like that last World Cup, when we went into that last World Cup, the men's one, where there were like four teams. You thought, these four teams could win this World Cup, right? And I just wonder if we're in a very similar situation here where we have three legitimate World Cup winning teams available to us.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Yeah, it'll be very exciting. And coming to the other women's cricket series that's ongoing, we've got like bits and pieces of it whilst playing with the kids.
Yeah. I've seen a fair bit of this one.
Yeah. And you know, making the furniture, using the electric grill.
You were making the furniture. Yeah. I was watching the England women. I think the game was actually on when we were doing that, but it was already over that game, wasn't it?
I had an electric drill in one hand and a beer in the other, and I had hit my peak masculinity at that very moment.
It's not a high peak.
But anyway, England and New Zealand, we spoke about the series last time as well. I believe the ODI series was already up and England had won the first T20I the last time we left it. The second T20I in the series was, damp squib, lots of rain in there. And what, it was initially a 9-over game.
Yeah.
And then it even got reduced further and England won by a DLS. So it was fairly comfortable for England. No scares. No scares at all in any of the games, really, if you think about it.
No, there was the one game, wasn't there? It got down to the last over.
Was it?
Yes. And when England needed 5 or 6 off the last over.
Hmm.
And I think you missed that one.
Oh, yes, I did miss that one. You told me about it. They dropped a lot of catches, right? New Zealand.
They should have won that game, New Zealand. They must have dropped 4 or 5 catches. And then 5 was needed off the last over. And then they must have needed 3 or 4.
Hmm.
And then New Zealand kicked the boundary. I was just like, my God. Like, they just looked like a team. If you're kicking a boundary, just walk off. That's it. You're done. Look, they've been really disappointing. We have said for a while now that, you know, Kerr, Bates and Devine look like they have to make all of their runs.
Yep.
Then Devine and Kerr have to take all of their wickets.
Devine did make runs in that one, right?
Yeah.
58 or something.
I think Kerr and Bates got runs early on.
Okay.
So it literally was the 3 that you would expect.
It was the one game which they could have won.
Yeah. They've been so disappointing.
Hmm.
They're basically one down for nothing almost every game, it feels, as well. And then then Kerr comes in and they get better. Look, the England are really good. Sarah Glenn has bowled really well.
Yeah.
And, Sophie Eccleston.
Amazing.
She looks like a cheat code. She's got a similar impact to women's T20 cricket that Jasprit Bumrah has in men's, where the minute she comes on, you just have to actually recalibrate where the game is.
And you can't even hit her at the death.
No.
Very similar to Bumrah in that regard.
You have to work out when her overs are coming out. And they use her even better than Bumrah, because they use her in a way that you're never quite sure when she's going to bowl her next overs, which I think is genius thinking. It helps being a spinner, because you do have that a little bit more flexibility, whereas at seamer, it's like 17 and 19. And sometimes she does 17 and 19. Sometimes she comes on slightly earlier, but she's just unhittable at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's been a few games where I've thought to myself, England are not struggling here, but England are, you know, getting to a point where, you know, you're checking the odds and you're checking the win predictors and the game's starting to get a little bit more equal. And then you're like, oh, but Eccleston, okay, she's taking too much.
She varies her pace really well as well. She'll bowl like 3 slowish deliveries and then bam.
Yeah.
She's going to target the stumps and she'll hit the stumps.
She got one with Bates. She got Bates out the other day with that.
And yeah.
I was like, if you're getting Susie Bates out with that, I think it just shows that she's very good at. So a lot of spinners vary their pace, right? But generally you can just see, oh, that's a faster arm.
Mm.
There's something about the way that Eccleston does it that the batters are not ready for it. As you said, I know this is going to sound silly, but her ability to hit the stumps, and I've almost put Sarah Glenn in this as well. Their ability to hit stumps almost every delivery is kind of actually what cricketers should do.
Hmm.
Because it means you have to take a risk against them every single time. And you're always a chance of being caught. But now you're also a chance of bowled in LBW. It'd be really interesting to have a look. I don't know if we have Hawkeye data on the women from that point of view. But I just feel that Sophie Eccleston, she keeps the stumps in play so much more than anyone else I've seen. Even compared to, you know, Jadeja, who's a really good guy at doing that as well. So I just think she's phenomenal at the moment, but no one can hit her. So all those, almost both teams that we just talked about, really fascinated to see how they go in this World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, she took 4 for 25 and 2 for 16 in the last two games. And Sarah Glenn took 1 for 14 and 4 for 19. And Sarah Glenn might just be my favorite, you know, character in cricket these days. She's such a cool customer. And I love the way she, like, bowls. Her action is really smooth and nice. I love wrist spinners anyway. And I feel like she is that under-the-radar spinner right now. People will talk about Sophie. They'll talk about Radha. They'll talk about Alana King. But no one's going to be talking about Sarah Glenn in that same or on that same sort of table. And I feel like she's there.
Yeah, look, I don't think she is quite at their level. But she just gets wickets all the time. And there is something about her that... I think she does have the ability of great leg spinners to bowl a crap ball and get a wicket. But again, I honestly think that she keeps the stumps in play just that little bit more than other people. And because of that, she's always a threat. And I think she's fantastic. I think she got some wickets the other day based on the fact she bowled after Sophie Eccleston.
Yeah.
Assisted
wickets.
But that's what we're talking about. That's the Bumrah thing. And you know, I don't know if Ashish or Varun could have a look at that for us one day, but it'd be interesting to see how often the first ball of the over after Eccleston gets wickets as well, because it does feel to me that she just put so many of her overs go for like none for two or none for three, and it's like the next ball, you're going to have to attack.
That's definitely something we could do in the build-up to the T20 World Cup. Varun, if you're watching this, make a note of that. And of course, there's Charlie Dean hanging in and around these two. That spin trio, that's why I feel like, you know, England having them at their disposal is why I'm rating them so highly for that T20 World Cup in Bangladesh. And then I also mentioned last week that there's a different player that steps up every time with the bat. This week it was Alice Capsey. She scored 67. So I love that they're not overly reliant on one batter. Different people come and pitch in. They bat deep as well. Daniel Gibson took a brilliant wicket the other day when we were watching together. And you know, she can whack it a long while. Sophie Eccleston can hit first ball sixes, right? They bat deep. They're not reliant on one or two batters. I feel like they've got as complete a team in T20 cricket as we've ever seen.
Ever seen?
I mean...
For England?
I started watching women's cricket a bit late.
Yeah, but Australia?
Oh, no. I meant for England.
Yeah.
Just for England.
I think that's a fair call.
Yeah.
I mean,
not the best team of all time, Jared. We know about the Australian team.
No, but you said most complete, which I thought was an interesting...
Most complete English team.
Yeah. But but again, I think that's an interesting phrase. Look, I think they're wonderful... I don't know. I haven't seen enough of India recently to know. And I'll be honest, I do think New Zealand's trash. So you got to factor all that in.
That's true. They haven't particularly been tested. Pakistan tested them more.
Pakistan played so much better than New Zealand. It's so funny. But yeah, let's see how they go.
Yeah. All right. It's time for us to take some super chats because we're done with our itinerary for overthrows. First up, we've got ABCDEF. He asks, or she asks, or they ask, is Bumrah the most complete fast bowler of all time? And are there any other players of his quality who came up with as little / zero hype? I feel like Bumrah had a bit of hype, no?
I wonder about that question because, like, lots of bowlers had no... Like, Glenn McGrath had no hype. When he first got picked for Australia, the Australian press were like, he doesn't have an outswinger, he's done.
But when we first saw Bumrah in the IPL, even when he was so raw, I feel like he had hype.
That's what I just think with bowlers, like, quite often they get picked out of nowhere and no one knows anything about them. That bit I don't understand. Most complete fast bowler, he can swing it, he can do the wobble ball, he can bounce you, he can york you, he's got slower balls. Yeah, so... I don't think anyone else has mastered as many of those individual skills before, but that's also the natural evolution of cricket at a certain point as well. Like Joel Garner maybe could have done all those things, but a lot of those things weren't available in his time. So that's things changed from that point of view. But in the same way that I always thought AB de Villiers was the first batter that had every single skill, you know, could block out a draw for 2 days or could sweep Lasith Malinga, right? Bumrah is the bowling version of that where, you know, they didn't invent all these things, but they perfected them.
Yeah, I feel like in contemporary cricket, no other seamer has as vast a bag of tricks and he is as devastating as Jasprit Bumrah. So in that regard, he's probably the most complete fast bowler of his time.
Yeah.
Jared's point.
And that makes him a vulture.
Exactly. But if you go back, there aren't as many skills available.
Yeah.
So how will we know that they could or could not have executed
them? So if you go back to Sid Barnes, I reckon the reason that Sid Barnes was so much better than everyone else is because he had a multitude of skills, right? Now, we don't know if he had as many skills as Jasper Bumrah because we didn't have a camera on him. And, you know, he was grumpy and didn't like to talk. Bob Appleyard is another really fascinating cricketer who we know has a brilliant record, who probably had a lot of different skills.
And did he have a yard of apples?
He was apple adjacent. So we have had bowlers with multiple skills before and complete. But yeah, in terms of what we know of modern cricket from 1960s onward, Jasper Bumrah has all the skills of all the other bowlers available to him, you know, that no one else has really ever mastered before. But the next bowler that comes along in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time might have an extra skill that Bumrah wouldn't have because it didn't exist in his time.
Mm. All right, Parth Right Winger, of course, he sends in a super chat. Every single overthrows and uncovered, I feel like Parth has a super chat. So thank you for all the donations and contributions, Parth. He asks, Jimmy's the victim of old school mentality of blaming bowlers when they are playing one great batter. He has Root in parentheses, plus 10 really talented tailenders. Is Gus the new Shardul or Bess? I mean, that's a bit harsh.
I don't think Anderson has been dropped on the bowlers get blamed for things side of things.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to move on because they're over-obsessing about the Ashes in 18 months.
They're doing two...
Which they said they'll never do, but now they are doing once again.
I think they're doing two things. I think that's definitely one of them that Bayram just said. And the other thing that they're doing is they're like, oh, it's time to move on. We need a reset. And you're like, that's not how international sport works. International sport, you use Jimmy Anderson until he's in a wheelchair. Right? If he has to bowl one out of every three test matches for you to get in when you need him, because there are going to be test matches in Australia, he might be handy for, right? And now they can't use him in Australia because he's no longer accessible.
And had they told that to him, that we're going to play you sparingly, but keep you
and
around,
he can make a decision.
He would have said yes.
Yeah.
Jimmy would have never left.
So I think that's fair. The Gus thing with Shardul or Best is really interesting, the Gus Atkinson thing. What was the guy? Was it Roland Jones?
Toby Roland Jones. Injury wrecked him.
Yeah, but he was... I think Toby Roland Jones once dismissed me in a club game bowling off spin, by the way. So injury really wrecked him. Hmm. No, I remember him taking a five for, right? And there's a bunch of South Africans that have done it before as well. They've taken a five for or a seven for in their first game and everyone gets really excited. And you're like, okay, if we go back through this delivery by delivery, which I have, I've got MV Play. I can go back and I can press the button on MV Play and I can watch each and every individual delivery. So I probably watched more of Gus Atkinson bowling this test match than anyone outside in England or a West Indian analyst has, right? And watching it, what I saw was a very good bowler who I still don't know what his main strength is going to be in test match cricket right at the moment. That's not quite the same as Bess, where I saw a very flawed bowler. And it's not quite the same as Shardul, where I was like, Shardul will be fine if he could ever be accurate, but can he ever be accurate? No, he's never going to be accurate enough.
Also, Shardul's skill set was different. They wanted him for handy runs as well.
Yeah, no.
That was a big part of it.
No, but so was Bess.
Yes, yeah. But then Bess was played before he should have been, and now he's in what, second division?
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, he's in the second 11, isn't he?
Yeah, but my point is, you look at those two players, you need one skill that is repeatable. Right? Yeah. At the moment, if you're comparing Atkinson to Shardul or Bess, Atkinson has one skill that is repeatable. He can bowl roughly accurate line and length at 90 miles an hour, right? That's a really good skill to have, right? You can bowl it consistently at that pace. His best ball isn't that good. Shardul's best ball is fantastic, but his ability to string enough balls together isn't good. So they've got that secondary skill. So I think the Toby Roland Jones is the better comp in that sometimes you can have too good a start to your career. And there's about 8 South African fast bowlers we could name that have done the same thing here. The truth is that I still think Atkinson, I don't feel any better or worse about Atkinson now that he's taken 12 wickets than I did beforehand. The problem is the expectation. He set an expectation that he's this kind of bowler.
Yeah.
And I don't believe he is this kind of bowler yet. I think he's probably a really good first change bowler who will average, 3.7 to 4.2 wickets per game. Who might occasionally run through some tails.
And I mean, whenever...
bowl some good bounces.
Exactly. Whenever the team wants to bowl bouncers, they'll bring Gus on.
I would be honestly the most shocked person in the world if he ever takes more than 10 wickets in another test match.
Interesting. Yeah. I'll hold you to that. Yeah. We'll make a reel out of it if he ever does.
I'd be really... And that's not to say he can't consistently take wickets, because I think he can. But I don't see him as this kind of bowler.
He is playing the West Indies in two more tests.
This one may not actually last. At the end of my conversation, he might have already just taken 11 wickets in the next match. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how Gus's career unfolds. And yeah, that's it for the Super Chats as well, which wraps up this episode of Overthrow. So thank you to everybody in the comment section and for the Super Chats as well. Just a quick reminder, you guys can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll be back with another episode of Overthrows next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.